and it's using the prior code that Rick mentioned, then it would not have to have that.
Okay.
If it is a new home, it would have to meet the new code. I know that they have to prep the space for the possibility of it, but I don't know to what extent that would be, what that would look like. That's something more of a building question that I don't have an answer to.
So these would all have 200 amp services, 200 amp service?
So I don't know what they're designing this as. 200 is pretty standard, but for some of these smaller homes, that may not be necessary.
If you had 200 amp, that would be your...
Yeah, when I had mine rewired, I had fuses, and I put, you know, breakers in, and it had to be 200 amps, but that didn't.
So the only other thing that would not be necessary for a new home is that if this is built as an accessory dwelling unit and the main home does not have fire sprinklers, then the ADU would not be required to have fire sprinklers as well. However, if the main home does have fire sprinklers, then the ADU would be required to have them as well. So it's really specific.
So the key in this is if it is a rebuild for a home lost in a fire,
yep,
the owner has the ability to use previous code and doesn't have to do. If it is a new, if the person who lost their home sold the parcel, the new parcel owner, they, today's code, they can't go back. Correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
It's specific to the
okay
property owner.
I don't know if that's correct. If you lost, don't you have to, if you have a fire in your house, don't you have to bring that up to current building code?
No, I'm saying if you lost, if I owned a home on a parcel in Weed that mm-hmm. got taken out by the mill fire, mm-hmm. and I made the choice, you know what, I don't want to rebuild here, and I'm just selling the parcel, and okay. I sold the parcel to you.
Okay.
If you're going to build one of these on that parcel, you have to abide by all of today's codes.
Right.
If I rebuilt a home before I sold it, I could build on old codes that were grandfathered in for the home that previously existed.
Because I've known people have lost their entire home, and you had to build it to the current.
Just to clarify a bit more, right? Huh? So these are homes that were burned and destroyed in a declared event.
Yeah.
So the state of California said, hey, you know, this meets the standard, it's declared emergency. If a single house burned down somewhere that was not declared, rebuilt, it would have to come to current code.
Yes.
Yeah. I think you'd want to come to current codes anyway, most cases.
And that code regression is only good for a limited amount of time after the fire. So it's not like 10
Do you know
years.
What, is that what, a 2-5 year, what
it's,
is the?
So we revised it, and it's now currently, it's 4 years from the date of declaration.
Okay. So in theory, if we're using the mill as an example, that was last year, correct?
Correct.
Was that, mm-hmm. okay. And it was declared last year in 22. So if this gets adopted this year, they would still have 2 years to be able to utilize these on those parcels if they have not already rebuilt.
Yeah, okay. As long as we get their application,
okay.
application submitted by September 2026.
Okay. Essentially an intent to build.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, after they apply and they are awarded, how much time do they have to complete the project?
It's just like any other standard home that you'd be building. Right? So you have to have your minimum inspections every 6 months and show progress.
So you have to, there's a timeline after it is approved that you have to build the home. Is there?
Two and a half years, if I remember. Is it 2.5 or two?
Right?
Yeah.
You know, you're active building your home, or not trying to work with
you. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to the next one, the two bedroom. All right, so this is the two-bedroom, one-bath. It's fairly similar to the other plans we have looked at already. It's bigger at 960 square feet, and the kitchen has the addition of a little pantry. That's a countertop depth pantry right there. This one is also designed for ADA, so it has the side-by-side washer space instead of the stacked. It has a hall closet. It's a pretty small one, but it's right off of the washer, dryer, and the bathroom. The bathroom itself is designed for ADA access, so that people can move around if they're in a wheelchair or a walker or anything like that. It also has a little extra linen closet at the end of the shower. Let's see. All of the porches are 6 foot deep on this one, and we have the optional one-car garage. This one does not have the water heater in it, so it has the option of not having the garage at all. Next one. The next one is the largest of our units that can be used as an ADU. It's a three-bedroom, two-bath, and it's just under 1,200 square feet. It has a full kitchen with the pantry that we saw on the previous one. It has the side-by-side washer, dryer, and the water heater in the garage. And the reason we moved those out into the garage for this unit is because ADUs are limited, detached ADUs are limited to 1,200 square feet. And we needed, I thought, a little bit more closet space than what we had in the previous version of this design. So what we did is we moved the washer, dryer, and water heater that were in this hallway, and we stuck them out into the garage, and that gave us a little bit of extra space for that closet, and it made it so that that square footage wasn't counted. Let's see. This one has front and rear porches. The front porch on this one is really, really large. Comparatively, Jeff's raising his eyebrows at me, but yes, for a house this size, a 12-foot deep porch is really large. So it has two separate depths. The full depth to the front door is 12 feet, and then the portion that's not in front of the front door is about 6 foot deep. In the back, as I mentioned, there is a rear porch. This one is about 5 or 6 feet deep. I don't have the actual dimensions off the top of my head on that one, but we designed it that way so that you could have your barbecue or whatever underneath this covered area right outside of the kitchen. And then also, if you're going in and out of the garage to do laundry or get out of your car and go home, you wouldn't be having to walk through the rain to do that. Let's see. As I mentioned before, we have that hall closet that's relatively large. Within this particular plan, we also have a linen closet in the hallway, and then once you go into the bathroom, there's a second linen closet. And I call them linen closets, but they could be used as broom closets, they could be used as game closets, they're just closets in general. The design on this bathroom is a little bit different than the ones that we've seen previously, because it has a double vanity that is in a separate room from the toilet and the shower. And we designed it that way since this is a three-bedroom house, and I don't know about the rest of you guys, but my kids tend to fight over who's in the bathroom. So this way you could have somebody either using the toilet or the shower, and you could also have a couple more people using the sink area. So it makes it so that it's a little bit more user-friendly and a little bit more accessible for more people, so that you don't have a line in the morning or in the evening trying to get their showers in. Let's see, there's a separate door between them, as you can see here. Let's see what else. Make sure I don't miss anything on my notes. Going into the master bedroom, this is a bigger bedroom than what we've seen before. The depth is about 14 and a half feet, so you have space over here in this area for a closet or a little extra sitting area, TVs, whatever. Just a slightly bigger room than the other two. It has an ensuite bathroom. To get to the bathroom, you have to walk through a little closet area. There are 2 6-foot closets, so that there's plenty of closet space for most people. And then you have dual vanities in the bathroom as well. Let's see, in the garage, this garage is bigger than your standard garage. That's a two-car garage. We made it 484 square feet. We had them make it extra deep so that there was a little bit of extra space for the washer, dryer, and water heater. And we also made it so that you have quite a large area for storage, shelving, workbench, whatever extra things you want to do in your garage other than to park your car. This plan also has an optional garage door location. So we designed it so that the left side of the plan is the front with the garage entry in the front. However, if somebody has a long skinny lot and it won't fit widthwise that way, they could actually make it so that this is the garage right here, and they could choose to make either the back door into the front door, or they could make the front door still remain the front door itself. So it's able to be flipped that way. You do not have to put your garage door in both locations. I know that on some of the plans, like on the next one, it'll show both, but it's an optional. You can choose which one you want. Any questions?
So on some of these others, the to accommodate a narrow lot, on some of the on the front ones,
Those other ones are really quite small as far as their footprint, but you could rotate them and place them any way you want on whatever property, as long as the jurisdiction that's involved.
You would change the porch and
Change the direction. Right. There is no particular direction, like this is north on this side. No, you can put it whatever way you want. And as I mentioned earlier, you can also mirror all of these plans. So that way they're different from what is currently shown.
These are little postage stamps.
Anything else? All right, last plan. So the last plan, this is the only one that cannot be used as an accessory dwelling unit, and that's due to the square footage. It's 1,650 square feet. This one also has a two-car garage. It has 2.5 bathrooms, and we have a separate laundry area in this particular one. The porches on this one are both front and rear, and we actually have a front porch that extends for quite a bit of the front of the house right here. It's designed as it's shown as about a 5 or 6 foot deep porch, and that is, as I mentioned, because of the garage. And it's easiest to look at on this first modern plan. You have a choice of where you want your garage door to be. The way we have it shown here is actually with both openings, but we intended it to be to the one on the right. This is going to be a courtyard area if it is used as a garage door here, if it's a long skinny lot that does not fit with the other direction. And so we had to make this front porch a little bit shorter because of that, but it's a possibility to make that change if you wanted to have a larger front porch. I also want you to notice on the modern plans, the front porch is covered, but it has two different options. You have a flat option here, and you have a slant option, as is shown on the very first plan. And the reason we made that change is that if people are in snow areas or in high wind areas, we wanted to have that roof to the porch a little bit lower to the ground, so that way we didn't have any weather blowing in, like snow piling up next to your house or something like that. So you have an option on this particular one to change how you want the roof. So when you walk into the house from that front porch, you're in a little entry area. This is designed as a pony wall or a half wall with a coat closet. It's a possibility that you could add a door here, a second door, and make this a full wall in order to make it an actual mudroom to totally enclose the entryway from the weather, or you can leave it as it is designed right now. Walking in, you're in a great room. You have a dining room, a living room, and a kitchen. The kitchen island, just to give you an idea of the scale, is 4 foot by 8 feet, and it's big enough for 4 people to eat at. So it's an eat-at kitchen. It has a small pantry off to the side by the dining room, and there's additional closet right next to it that could be used for anything you want as far as bedding or bathroom material. Or it could be used as an additional food pantry area. The bathroom that is just in front of that closet is just a standard sink, toilet, shower. nothing special about that particular one. You have two bedrooms, each with their own closets, and then heading towards the garage, this is where the laundry room is. The laundry room has a side-by-side washer dryer, and then there's a half bathroom in this plan to make it so that you don't have people arguing over who's in the bathroom in the morning, hopefully. The garage is a two-car garage, and it's actually bigger than the previous one that we saw. This one is 620 square feet, so it's an extra big one for this size of a house. It does have the water heater in the garage, and it does have an extra door, a human door, not a garage door, leading to the outside. We had them draw in what we imagine is going to be a workbench or shelving unit here, just to give people an idea of what the possibilities are. These cars that they're showing on the plan are full-size SUVs and trucks, so that's pretty much the biggest vehicle that they had in their design plan that they stuck there, so that way you guys have a better idea of scale. going back into the house, into the master bedroom, the master bedroom has a walk-in closet, and it has a small extra closet just outside of the bathroom. Once you go into the bathroom, you have double sinks and a third closet in the bathroom itself. Plus, on this particular one, you have the extra room for the toilet and the shower. Back into the bedroom itself, there's a sliding glass door that leads out to the covered patio area right here. This area that's behind the smaller bedroom and bathroom is also covered, but there's not a direct access from the interior to it. The living room itself has the access that you would be able to use for that, and it's just a sliding glass door. Let me check my notes, make sure I'm not missing anything. I think that's it. Did anybody have any other questions?
So the max on an ADU, is it 1,200 or 1,199?
So for accessory dwelling units, it's 1,200 square feet of the living space, and the garage does not count for the living space. And the exterior patios don't count either.
Okay.
So how long has this been available for people to come in and access this?
So right now, this is basically a preview of the plans. We are finalizing the plans with the designer right now. However, if people want to use these, what we're doing now is providing them for people to look at so that they can make a decision. We've had people asking us about these plans for months now. So we wanted to get them out, the floor plans and the elevations, as soon as possible so that they can make a decision. Are these plans that I actually want to have on my property, or do I need to find another set of plans? So once people take a look at these and they can make their educated decision on it, then what they'll do if they do decide to use these, they need to make sure that their site is adequate for what they're proposing to build. And then they need to work with environmental health for their well and septic, or if they have a jurisdiction with water and sewer, they will need to work with them on that. And so there's some steps that they have to go through before they're ready, which will take some time. So we expect that by the time that our plans are ready, once people are looking at these now, it'll be about the same time that they will also be ready with their material. As Rick mentioned, this is kind of a soft rollout. We have never done this before, especially what has never been done before in California that we could find is offering these plans to other jurisdictions. So we're rolling these out to the county first and trying to get our processes in place, and then we're going to be working with the cities to figure out what they need for their processes. So it could be that, as I mentioned, Weed was really excited about these plans, and they'll be okay with us saying, yeah, we've checked them, they're good, you can use them, and they'll say, yes, we agree that you have checked them, and we know that they're good plans to use, we don't need to recheck them. However, perhaps one of the other cities that is a little bit more particular, they might have extra standards that are beyond what these plans have, and they may end up wanting to have the plans submitted directly to them for review. In that case, if that is the situation with that city, the person who's building can work with the designer to make any of the necessary changes, to make them site-specific as far as putting all of the information on the plans that are for this particular property that they're proposing to build, and then submitting them to the city. The city can then review them, and they can follow their standard procedure. But the plans themselves, regardless of what the cities, you know, have to say, they will be available to the people there for free, except if they have to make changes because of the cities. So that would be the situation that.
Yeah. So what they're saving actually is the architectural fee and engineering fees, and that's really basically all they're saving.
So, and yeah, and so, and the time. So when we wrote this grant, yeah, we were looking at the cost and time savings that's involved, and we estimated $25,000 per house that is going to be built, and also about a year of time. However, if they have to go back to the designer because of their city, then it would add extra time because of that. As far as add extra time beyond just walking up to the counter with everything else, your site plan ready and your environmental health side stuff ready.
So when this gets ready, say you pick farmhouse one, right? You'll have the plans, you go in and say, I want farmhouse one. You submit you pay your fee, you walk out with the plans, and you can start building.
So for us, we're actually not even charging. I think that we're charging inspection fees, maybe, Rick.
Yeah, the plan check review fee will not apply, but everything else will.
So, and will have already been checked.
Yeah.
So the time, though, that is.
So to answer your question, you come in, you pick out a plan. Right, you have to submit a complete application for that, right? So it's more than just a plan. So you got to have a site map.
Site,
if it's not in the fire legal area, you need to have independently gotten your photovoltaic plan done, engineered, and also your sprinkler systems engineered, and probably a soils letter from an engineer on the site, right? Mm-hmm. Those are all site-specific things that will have to be added
prior to that.
The entire package. So now, you know, we changed our operation to require that plans, before they're accepted, they're complete, right? Just historically, folks would come in with half-average stuff, and it was less manageable, I'll say. So we want to have a complete set of plans to come to the board, and we'll start routing them through the process. It's got to get all the signatures from CAL FIRE, roads, and so forth, right? So the gamut of what you do already is going to be in place. But part of saying, I want that plan, get you the plans, you have all the engineer specs and everything, builder's two copies dialed in. We also got some other monies from the SB2 grant for a plotter and plotting paper. So until we run out of that service will be free also.
So traditionally, if you came in with a set of plans, what's the turnaround time for a plan check approval?
Better now than it was last year.
Yeah. So the team has got it down to sub 1 month.
How much?
Less than a month.
Less than a month.
Yeah.
Minutes, please.
You need a break?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break. We will reconvene at 10:29.
We are taking a break, and we will be returning shortly.
So,
do we want to pause this recording up here, Haley? Hit the square for stop or pause?
Yeah, that's pause. Fine. Pause is
fine. Okay, we're going to call back early. All parties are back in the room. Rachel, let me know. We have a hand raised online. Is this a comment or question to the design report that we are currently receiving? And if so, go ahead.
I do not know what they have their hand raised about, but we can ask them to
go ahead.
Unmute.
Probably Ann Marsh.
Battery 100%.
Lateness of my entry. I missed the beginning of the meeting, and I wanted to talk about ward zone change, D2203. Have we passed that already?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. That item has already passed. It was approved.
Sorry. I have a lot of things to say about what's wrong with the environmental process and the neighborhood with that business there. Will there be a chance for me to speak later?
Yes, so this project, or the ward project, will actually be going to the Board of Supervisors, and so you will have an opportunity to speak when that project is heard by them.
We'll be getting a notification.
If you got a notification for this meeting, then you will be getting one for that meeting as well.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
You're welcome, have a good day.
Okay, so Rachel, back to you on your closets.
I'm pretty much done with my presentation unless you have additional questions. And I'll have you know that if you had seen the original,
you like plans, your closets and bathrooms,
lot more closets,
I can tell.
Than there are in the original plans.
See, in our house, granted, there's only one kid, but it's you get there first, you get to use it. You get there late, you may not get a shower and make it to school on time. It is the way. And if he's in there too long, I go and I flush two toilets and it immediately goes hot. He screams and the shower gets shut off. That's what mom and dad used to do to me. If I'm in there too long, go flush a toilet. Boom, scald your back and you jump out of the shower.
We used to heat our water with the incinerator, summer and winter, you know, when I was a kid. And in the summer, you don't want no damn incinerator in the kitchen. So, you know, we used to just put the water in the tub in stationary trays, God's truth, and let it warm up a little bit and then jump in the stationary tray and take our bath.
Yep. And we had a cast iron tub that you built a fire underneath and you heated the water, and then you wanted to be the second or third person because then it was perfect temperature. The first person, you'd burn your butt in the bottom of the tub. Okay.
God, I love yesteryear.
So you're completed. Any other questions for Rachel and her bathrooms and her closets?
All's well.
Okay. Then we shall move on to agenda item 4, our public participation by Zoom, which council gave us Actually, the council, why don't you go ahead and present it, and we have several options to select from.
Yes. Bill Carroll, Assistant County Counsel. I'm here today to talk about how to receive public comment, and the commission still wants to keep receiving public comment over the internet and Zoom as we currently do now. As I put in my memo, we've really reverted back to the traditional Brown Act requirements, which is just hold a meeting and be able to receive public comments. Never before COVID was it required to receive comment remotely, and generally it wasn't. The law did not change in that respect after the governor's order rescinded. There are a couple of more exceptions in the Brown Act as to telebroadcasting and receiving comment can be allowed. I almost don't want to get into those, so I don't want to confuse the issues. Generally today, we're just talking about our regular planning commission meeting where there's no emergency going on and all the commissioners are here in person. Some of the options are, as I put in my memo, one, obviously we keep doing what we are doing now. Second is to reduce the internet to broadcast only. The Board of Supervisors has done that a couple of times this year with their special meetings. I actually, as I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know what the rationale was, but that is what the Board of Supervisors did for their two special meetings. One was a joint meeting with the two other counties, and one was the special meeting you attended last month. And no public comment was received as agendized at those meetings, but there is the fact that sometimes staff or consultants do have attended over internet in the past, and I differentiate staff and consultants from the public being somebody who's not an employee of the county, so that would include general public commenters or project opponents or proponents. Those those persons are in a class outside of staff or consultants and are within the, or not within any special privilege within the Brown Act as it stands now to do anything other than have their public comment be heard in person. That all being said, they can still always provide emails or letters as well at any time. Third, you could just discontinue the internet altogether. There's nothing, there's no requirement in the Brown Act that during our regular meetings we have to be using the internet at all. And then fourth, I put somebody, one of you may have some other ideas, and we all can certainly be open to those as well. So that's basically what you have before you today, if you wanted to choose to do anything different.
Questions, comments? Commissioner Mello, Commissioner Veal?
Well, I just think, you know, with the cost of fuel being what it is in the rural community that we are in, I think it's nice that people like, say, Tule Lake or Doris or Happy Camp would have the ability to at least observe this meeting and make a comment. And, you know, technology, I think, will finally, we will come to a place where we may not need meetings like this. It may be all, you know, online or so to speak. It's very cumbersome now, but if you look at newscasts a lot of time, they will be talking to somebody in a different country and it looks like they're right there in the room. So, I mean, technology will probably drive this more than anything else, the advance of technology.
Commissioner Mello?
Commissioner Fowle, you made a comment when we first talked about this, about sort of leaving it the way it was.
Mm-mm.
No? What did you say?
No, my personal
because
feeling...
Because I agreed with you.
My personal feeling on this, respectfully to Commissioner Veal, I agree that someday in Siskiyou County, technology may be capable of handling this. But as of 2023, the reliability and the quality of technology makes it more cumbersome for us to have people comment through the internet than it's worth, in my opinion. I fully support having the ability to broadcast it, and depending where people are online, they might be able to catch all 50% of it, 75% of it, but if they're interested in listening, by all means, let's make that opportunity available. If and when technology in Siskiyou County catches up with the rest of the country, maybe we revisit it, but for right now, broadcast only. If you're gonna make comments, you get here in person.
And or come through the
Write us, email us.
Write a letter,
yeah.
Send an email. There's multiple avenues.
That's me personally.
You know, that's, and I agree with you. I just.
No, I know. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying, you know, to accommodate these outlying areas, sometimes it's kind of nice to, I don't know how they do that by not being able to make comments, but.
Because I know when I participate in online hearings in Sacramento, I have to go park under the pole barn on the east side of the ranch between the second and third bay in order to not drop the call.
Move your pole barn.
That's the only place on the ranch mm-hmm. where I have reliable reception. Even my internet at home, it's hit and miss, and I'll be in the middle of a meeting and all of a sudden everything crashes. And that's why I'm driving to Sacramento today for the next two hearings, because they're important enough. I've got to be able to be involved. I can't get dropped. So
I think we're in agreement.
Okay. So then, and just to be clear, counsel, this policy that we may adopt today has nothing to do, it's an entirely separate issue from a commissioner participating in a meeting, which would require a resolution. We'd have to clearly state the location that said commissioner would be at. It'd be open for public participation at that location. That's completely separate from what we're talking about here. This is only on public comment interaction with our commission meetings.
Yeah, you've stated things exactly correct. It's a completely separate consideration okay. today than any, anyways, I won't get into it. You correctly stated that.
Okay, so then we covered the public participation portion of this. The other section that you brought up was staff and consultant ability to participate via internet. Commissioners are, is there a feeling one way or the other to lean that direction or treat apples as apples? Don't separate and start picking bananas and oranges and apples, and it's one rule for apples, one for oranges, and the other for bananas.
Based on that joint meeting with the Board of Supervisors and the discussion that went on, they have to be in-house, and something as important as that, in my opinion.
Of course, this all depends if the county board of supervisors agree with.
No, this is our policy.
I know, but they could overrule that, right?
Nope.
Not on. They can't overrule our policy.
No, sir.
This is how we run our meetings.
Okay.
They can choose how they run their meetings. We choose how we run our meetings.
Okay.
We set the example. We lead, they follow. Usually. Okay, so we're. Apples and apples.
Yeah.
All right. I'd entertain a motion then, which I believe, if I've heard correctly, would be a item number. It would be number four, some other policy that we would recommend to allow the use of internet as a means to broadcast only, period.
And not receive staff comment and consultant comment. Okay, so I would delete out of
delete the parentheses on number two and simply say allow use of the internet as a means to broadcast only.
Right. I'm looking, there's an actual resolution. I would delete out of have paragraph one of the resolution that if an internet service is available to do so, planning commission proceedings may be broadcast over the internet, period. And to lead out, and the Planning Commission may receive staff and consultant presentations.
It's this here. This resolution here.
I'm looking for the motion. I see the resolution.
The motion is just approved the resolution.
Oh,
here it is. Yes, right here. If the commission so desired, yes.
I would say approve the proposed, the motion would be approve the proposed resolution establishing a policy regarding remote public attendance as modified so as not to allow staff and consultant presentations over the internet.
Okay.
You happy with that?
I can live with that. It's broadcast only. Okay, so moved by Commissioner Mello.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Beal. Any further discussion? This is voice vote. All in favor?
Roll call vote.
Huh? Oh, it is roll call.
It's a roll call vote.
That is. You're right. So let's roll call it.
Commissioner Mello?
Yes.
Commissioner Beal?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowle?
Yes. Let the record show the resolution is approved unanimously. And we move on for number three, ongoing staff update regarding the general plan update as per my request. Thank you all.
Haley Lane, Planning Director. So as Commissioner Fowle mentioned, this was a request that came from the Joint Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors meeting that took place at the end of August. And so this will be a standing item that will be on our agenda, and I will be providing updates as needed. So as you're all aware, we met at the end of August, had a very lengthy discussion with the board and the public and the consultants regarding, you know, somewhat high-level discussion, what are the strengths of the county, weaknesses, challenges, things like that. The meeting was, what, 3 or 4 hours? The consultant, by the way, they are preparing a formalized memo of the comments and the discussion, everything that was taking place that day. So once that is completed, I'll take a look at it, and then I will you know, forward that to you all, or just provide it at the upcoming Planning Commission for the record so you have that. So with this process, we've just started it. We are within the project initiation phase, so essentially just gathering a lot of information, you know, to kickstart this process. And so what Rick, you know, just dropped off to you all is our first newsletter. So this is the first of a series of newsletters. So this is something that the consultants have created. That you can obtain from our website, which is siskiyou2050.com. And so this first newsletter is high level, just explaining the process, certain deliverables, and, you know, the general timeline of the project, and things to look out for, what is the purpose of a general plan, and things like that. So as I mentioned, that's on our general plan website for download. Also, there has been an email listserv that's created, so these types of updates will automatically be queued up for folks that are receiving these updates via email, should they want to receive those updates. Yes.
Having to do this, is there any monetary beneficial to the county other than the cost, which is not beneficial, of course?
Are you asking a benefit to providing
monetary
these updates?
Benefit. What, having this general plan in place, what does that do for the county monetarily? Is there any reward, if you will?
Sure. So, you know, since this update, you know, related to land use and zoning code, a comprehensive update hasn't really happened. You know, the hope would be to really take a look at our land use in order to streamline processes. And for example, allowance for more administrative permits or things like that related to home occupations. So those process updates, you know, streamline and expedite things also from staff and then also the public. Also taking a look at land uses and reconfiguring the zoning of certain land uses can potentially help with development, which there's a monetary value to that, or also the expansion of, you know, our certain zoning code districts. There's a monetary benefit to that potentially, but we're really trying to look at this to streamline processes that take far too long within our department is the main thing, and just allowing for better use of, you know, private land within the county.
How about environmental quality issues? Will that be incorporated in this?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a program EIR that is required to take place as part of this update. And so once we have an updated EIR associated with the general plan, it will allow staff to exempt certain projects. So there is a CEQA statute 15183 that notes if you have an updated general plan with a fairly updated EIR, you can do a categorical exemption that connects to the general plan EIR. And so you pretty much just go through like the Appendix G checklist. And so if there's nothing peculiar on the site, you can kind of go through that process and say, yeah, we did that, looks good. And it doesn't require us to go through M&Ds and EIRs. And that's specific for discretionary permits like use permits. If it's a zone change, we'll still have to go through the full-blown CEQA process. But with that, that will expedite, you know, a number of development projects within the county when we'll be able to do that.
If EIR restrictions change during this process, they will be addressed in that current?
Yeah, I believe the EIR scoping isn't...
That's just a general comment. You know, they change the rules all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really depends on the rule change, I think, but generally if you have an updated EIR that meets requirements, then you're good to go. But it really is specific on the project and then what, you know, legislation change happens with CEQA, because, you know, so much happens.
Because my biggest concern is water.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of it up here, but we have no way to protect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's, you know, a perfect opportunity to really discuss that issue within this general plan process to see if there's something, you know, we can control locally. And you make a good point, you know, with these long range planning processes, they're only as good as the public participation, you know, so we get a lot of comment related, you know, our zoning, our general plan, our land use, things like that. So this is really a time for the public to be invested and vet out their interests, their concerns, things that they like or don't like. You know, this process is only as good as folks make it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you done?
I was going to just add a few more.
Okay, I've got a couple questions, so go ahead and finish
okay,
first.
Okay, sure. So other things that were happening internally is, you know, staff were going through our general plan elements and going through our policies within those documents and kind of taking inventory of those. Do we like them? Do we want them to change? Do we want to take them out? Things like that. So, and we've been sending that information to the consultants just so they can get an idea at a staff level what our thoughts are. Obviously, there's going to be a fully vetted public process related to policies within the general plan element. And then, yeah, the consultants, they've been reaching out to a lot of county agencies and state agencies on a request for information to form their existing conditions / background report. So that will be ready, I think, for internal staff review end of winter, early spring, and then it will, you know, be brought forth to the commission and the public for an administrative draft review process. And that report is really important. It's basically, you know, the storytelling paints the picture of what's currently occurring within the county, and that is used to inform the land use element. And I believe there's a lot of requirements on what has to be noted and things like that related to existing conditions that we have to integrate within the land use element. So that's something that the consultants are working on right now in the background.
The thing that I know that in the Bay Area, the air quality is very important. And
mm-hmm.
They've banned wood stoves and gas ranges is banned.
Mm-hmm.
Is that to drift up here is a requirement from?
So it depends. We're in a non-attainment area, and so you know, based on your attainment within the state of California and population and things like that, you have certain requirements that you have to uphold based on your area. I don't believe that's a thing that our air pollution control district is required to enforce in any way, but you know, for example, I know like in the Central Valley, their air pollution control district, they have like a gamut of requirements and things like that. So if the state of the air quality changes and we get, you know, tiered into a more intense mm-hmm. level district, then potentially, but at this time, no.
That is why it is essential
yeah.
that Jim Smith file the papers every week when we have wildfires for the exemption, or our air quality mm-hmm. tier would change
mm-hmm.
and we'd have a hammer dropped on us. But
yeah.
he spends more time filling out papers to keep us at the bottom tier than it's worth when it's clear it's a wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
But he still has to. Every time the AQI bumps up above, what is it, 120?
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
yeah.
boom, and he's got to fill out a paper. It's like, well, it's from the wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. He's got to stay on top of that. Mm-hmm. And it eats up his time. It's something fierce.
Mm-hmm.
So are you done now?
I'm done with my comments.
Okay. Any other questions from you two before
no.
I?
Not at
okay.
this point, sir.
First question. Are you confident that the consultants are collecting all of the requested information, or is staff assisting them in collecting the requested information for that background report as was brought up at our joint meeting?
I am, yes, because I am assisting them with the process. And so I'm connecting them with people. I'm vetting the information that they're receiving.
Okay.
So I'm very much intimately involved in that process.
Okay. And I'm stressing this particularly on the one item is a current current accounting of existing roads in the wilderness that have been put back in due to wildfire. And I bring this up because I did a little digging and had a few calls. We had the notorious fire camp miraculously just spring up for 3 weeks over in Scott Valley. Not because they needed the camp for actively fighting fire, but because if the U.S. Forest Service had not spent that money out of their budget and zeroed it out, they couldn't then request full funding again for the next fire season, which is absolutely asinine. This was not a bad wildfire year. They should have been able to not put that camp in for probably a couple million dollars is what it cost them.
This Hornling?
Yeah, legitimately. But save that for next fire pad for when we may need that camp instead of being short. And it's why I'm so concerned with the upland roads, because mark my words, we're going to go 1, 2, or 3 years without a lot of fires, and we're going to have a big decommissioning move to decommission all these fire roads that got put in. So then in 4 or 5 years, when we have another wildfire season, they get to spend money putting roads right back in.
And taking down the gates they put up.
Right. It's like the pendulum just keeps swinging instead of, hey, find the middle road, invest, maintain, save for when you need it. And surely Siskiyou County as a government can have some say and hopefully some influence on those upland roads so they don't get decommissioned again, which increases response times. Increases expense, increases erosion. Just put in the road, maintain it, boom, done.
Sir, I have to comment on your spending of the money that's allocated.
Well, it's the government.
This has been long, and I don't remember the particulars, but when I was on the city council, we wanted to get some funding for something, and I don't remember, and they had an excess in the Forest Service budget. And they gave, and I don't remember the particular, I'll say that again. They gave us some money so that they could spend it, because if they didn't, they lost it on the next round.
Right.
Oh, sure.
That was deducted from their next year's budget.
Yeah.
Right. Honest to God.
Yeah. No, the way things operate, and so it's like, we can't handle how they determine to spend their money on fire camps. That's out of our purview. But surely when it comes to roads, even though this county doesn't have a grading ordinance, we should be able to have some influence or impact on that, because it is an environmental, public health, and safety issue, which is under our umbrella to an extent in those areas.
Sure.
My next question, I was able to eat lunch and give away some choke cherries. See, you didn't go with them on the tour.
It was just us.
It was just the two of you. Both days, just the two of you? Okay.
Correct.
What were your senses of the discussions of the consultants as you did your countywide tour?
I Well, as mentioned, we spent 2 days. The first day focused on Sky Valley area, went down through the tribal area, as you suggested. Went through Callahan with Gazelle, tied in with Supervisor Kobsa. He joined us at Weed, took over, so we covered South County, moved into McLeod, and discussed it along the way. Things that we're presenting, you mentioned the grading ordinance. We took him out there and walked around the Vista, Shasta Vista area, and demonstrated our great need for a grading ordinance. It's obviously, you know, everything's just been denuded, no controls at all. So that was a concern. The other primary targets that we were trying to focus on are potential areas to move to the industrial zoning to try to incorporate, you know, more opportunities for business. And then other, you know, the vast agricultural presence and the need to preserve that at all costs, quite frankly. Got them a little bit more in tune with the Klamath Basin area, the refuge, the complete demise of that. You know, the biodiversity there is basically 1% of what it was 4 years ago. Had those conversations. So pretty much got a pretty good feel of, I think, the county, how we operate, how we do, what our resources are.
Okay. So now here's question. And council, you might need your expertise on this one, or I may be giving you another homework assignment. Within planning and community development, one of the components is recreation. When the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service 2.5 weeks ago made the declaration that there would be zero waterfowl hunting in the refuge at Tule, was there any consultation done with the county before they placed that ban?
I don't know, and I will have to check to get your answer.
That, and maybe this isn't planning, but I know we have, in my time here, we have seen two projects that, well, four, that were specifically involving recreation. And hunting is, under the law, deemed recreation. And I find it troubling at best, overreach at worst, if there was no consultation done with the county before that declaration was done, because there are numerous businesses, privately owned businesses, that are going to be taking it in the shorts this winter because of that ban. And
who would they consult with the city, with the county?
They should have at least come to the supervisors, I would think.
The supervisors.
Because they just hammered in one area of our county a major source of revenue for some private businesses. Hammered them. The Airbnbs that are over there, the motels, the lodge, the guides, the fellows that, I mean, I know two guys that their private business, they bank every winter on selling shotgun shells, insulated clothing, renting out boats, blinds, you name it. That's their business. And they, here 2.5 weeks before, well, 3.5 weeks before hunting season was supposed to start, were told there will be no hunting allowed on the refuge, period.
I'll start with the county administrator's office. They do have a natural resources section.
Okay.
We'll see what happened, if any, from Fish and Wildlife contact.
Okay. Yeah, that bothered me. I mean, they're saying because there's no water. Well, there's no water because of the government.
I mean, I haven't even heard of this till now. I'll look into it.
Yep. I wouldn't even have known about it, except I happened to be at the Tule Lake Fair showing sheep. And on Sunday morning, Aaron and Doug LaMalfa showed up in the sheep barn, said, hey, are you coming to our meeting? We're having a little town hall before the auction starts. Like, what on? Said, on the hunting ban that just got put in place by U.S. Fish and Wildlife. It wasn't CDFW, it was U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, that's what I understood, yeah.
So, otherwise, I wouldn't even have known about it. So, I mean, my son goes over there four or five different weekends during the season. But yeah, it's going to be a financial hit to a lot of local small businesses.
Sir,
okay. Yeah.
The reason for this was lack of water?
Well, they're saying, their argument, as I understand it, one, they felt that because of the lack of water, it would put too many waterfowl in a certain area, which would lead to a higher take by hunters and could potentially negatively impact a population of several species.
So which, water was the basis for their theory?
It's a fact. It's a fact there's not water on the refuge.
They ain't seen nothing yet.
But what they don't get on the ground is they are not overly populated by waterfowl there with the water reductions. We've seen it the last 5-6 years. Those birds are going elsewhere, but it's a tremendously viable option, especially for disabled hunters and our youth hunters. It's easy access, and it's giving the disabled vets, the non-vets that are disabled, other individuals, our youth, and getting them out doing something productive, learning something productive, and it just hammered it for no scientifically solid reason.
Thank you.
They are not overly populated with waterfowl because of the water shortage. The birds have gone elsewhere. There's still flocks that come in there, but it's not like you're going to lose a population.
The last 10 years have been considered drought years.
We've got sandhill cranes up the wazoo over there in the valley right now. We've got the snow geese are coming to the valley right now, who normally went there, but no water, they're coming to Scott Valley. So it's a question I had. Something to think about is general plan. How do we incorporate recreation as a plan or part of the general plan?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, those were my three things on that. Any other questions on general plan discussion? Claire's not here to talk water, and I'm not going to bring that one up. So those future meetings, item number 4-1, October 18. Let me double check here. Make sure I'm going to be here for that one.
Yep, it's 18th.
Yes, I am going to be here for the 18th. Correspondence.
None.
Okay. It's funny you're still talking into the mic. You realize there's no recording on the mics.
It's by habit.
I was seeing you and Rick.
It's by habit. It's because they're used to having me not hear them.
They're programmed.
Them well.
Yes. Staff comments.
None.
Commission, you had a question.
Oh, about Haley.
So we've got Haley as Deputy Director of Planning, and we have Haley as Executive Officer.
We grabbed the wrong one.
That's why I was referring to Haley 1 and Haley 2. It's like, And you're Rachel. Yes, you're Rachel.
We're missing Janine, obviously.
Was that the question you had?
I thought you were the director, not the assistant, or the deputy. You're not the
director. So I'm the planning director, but formally I'm the deputy director of planning because Rick is the director of community development. So myself, Dan Wessel, environmental health director,
okay.
And the building official, we're all deputy directors.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job.
Oh, thanks.
Question?
Just want to say thank you for your presentation on the houses.
Yeah, feel free to let anybody know that it's coming and give them my name, and we can definitely provide them with more information if they need it or want it.
That's the balls in their court there.
Yep.
I'm thanking you for what you did for me.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, and I have nothing further to add to the chaos, so we're adjourned.